COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
I'm Brooke.
And you're here with
a... Run that back.
And you're here with us on... God damn it, Dad. Custom. Yep. I'm recording. Teachers Who Talk Crime.
Podcast. Yep.
Mm-hmm. We did that. I literally can't get a break. This is really crazy.
We did that.
Yeah, we did it. And I'm going to leave it all there because you deserve to hear it. So you're welcome.
Yeah, well, you know. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Tell us about that little baby.
Oh, we have a new baby.
We got a TTC baby. A TTC baby. A TTC baby.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He is so freaking cute.
Yeah, the pictures you sent, adorable.
Yes. So he is doing so well. He is responding to everything super well. And, you know, I love how, like, nurses explain things to people, understanding that the person they're explaining it to is not a nurse.
Yeah.
Right? Teachers suck at that. Like, we'll be like, yeah, he has a BIP and a 504 and an IEP. And people are like, huh?
What are that?
What are those words you are saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep,
But nurses really do explain things well, and the best way that they explained it to us is even if he got out of his crib, walked and talked tomorrow, he has to stay in the NICU for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, that's procedure and protocol and, like, for their benefit and their safety and
Absolutely.
Just all of those things. And I mean, you know, we're super grateful for all of that. It does. I mean, we did want to bring him home.
Yeah. He gonna come home though.
But
he gonna come home.
He will. But he's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I have a Casey Rae story.
Oh Lord.
I'm putting on my makeup and Casey comes in the bathroom and she's trying to hurry me up, but she gets distracted and she's looking in the mirror and she goes, "Baby." I said, "Yeah, baby." "I am so cute." I said, "Oh my God, yes, you are. You are. You are so cute."
No, yes, queen.
Like, "I know." I was like, "I wonder where you get this from."
From BB.
Absolutely. And yes. Yes.
I'm crying.
So.
Okay, see. Does she love being a big sister?
Well, she can't go in there. She's only seen him on FaceTime because you can't go in unless you're 18 or older.
Mm-hmm.
But Mary FaceTimed her while she was in there. And she just kind of got in the phone and was looking. And she was like, "That's a silly brother. That's a silly brother." So.
What was making him so silly? I'm crying.
I have no idea. But I think she thinks that when he comes home, he's just going to be like ready to play.
Oh, yeah. That's hard for kids to grasp.
Yeah. He's not just going to hold Barbies and play dump trucks. And
yeah. He's going to scream and poop and scream some more and fart and throw up a little.
Yeah.
Probably on you, you know?
Yeah. Mary got to change Jax's diaper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the nurse was like, "I'll be right back. You can hold him. Let me go get my stuff and, like, you can hold him. But while I'm gone, like, you can change his diaper." Mary was like really excited. She got super excited. She started changing the diaper and she goes, "Nurse." And the nurse came back over there and she said, "Yeah." She said, what's wrong?" She goes, I don't know what to do with this thing.
I'm crying.
She said, I only have a girl. Like, I don't know. She goes, do you go front to back, back to front? Like, what do you do on a boy? She's like, I don't know what to do.
The same thing you would and do with a girl. You just got to watch this. You got to, you know, wipe down his little thing. Yeah.
And the nurse goes, oh, just make sure it's tucked down so it doesn't, doesn't come out of yep. the top of the diaper.
And then pee all over his chest.
Yep.
Damn.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a whole different set of rules.
It's crazy because I like, if I have like more kids, I obviously want a boy. And I didn't even think of this until just now. Like, the adjustment yep. period. Like, yep. make sure it's tucked. Like, ooh, yikes.
Wait, wait, huh?
No, gracias.
You mean it's just going to like, just.
Yeah. Yep. I can't wait till she gets her first like peed on. Like, that's going to be funny. Because I feel like it's every mom's rite of passage with a boy. Like, you're not really a boy mom until you get peed on.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Very true.
She's just going to be there like, oh, I'm changing. He's going to be like, whoop.
Hey, mom.
Yep.
Watch this trick.
Look what I can do.
We see.
I could not. I'm crying.
Yes, that's our update. And that's really all the updates that, like, we have.
Yeah. Yeah. Work is still the same, you know. So, we trying to be a little bit more joyous since we got a new baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, more positive.
Yeah, trying to, you know, just be positive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of work, we got some students. But here on Teachers Talk Crime.
Yeah.
We have a star student.
We have an estudiante estrella.
Yeah. I'm going to throw it all the way back.
Okay.
To March 9th.
Okay.
Okay, we launched in March 7th. Mm-hmm. So this is like a two-day review.
They were like dang, we love it.
We were on cloud nine. We were hype
mm-hmm. yeah.
about this review. Because it was one of our first. Yeah. And it is from Miss Lisa M.K.
Miss Lisa M.K.? Miss Lisa Michael Kors, girl?
Yeah.
I need me a new bag, Miss Lisa M.K., okay?
And her review is 5 stars. Beep, 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 beep. It says, a great find. Well, you found us within 2 days of us launching, so thank you very much.
For your review. Sorry, it's not time.
Yep. Yep. And it says, came here from your Facebook post. Glad I gave it a try. I'm really liking you ladies so far. I def will keep listening. Smiley face.
Okay.
Well, I really hope you're still listening, Miss Lisa M.K.
For real, Miss Lisa M.K. If you're
I
still
hope
listening.
We didn't run you off.
Yeah, because we be. I mean, I feel like we still just. I feel like our episodes are quality.
Yeah, 100%.
We have quality episodes. So, Miss Lisa M.K., hope you're still listening. But also, thank you so much for your review. This gold star's for you. Bing.
That was nicely done.
Thank you. It's been a while mm-hmm. since I did that. I was a little mm-hmm. worried about how it would come out of my body.
Yeah. Nope. Why?
You know, sometimes I just feel like it's going to come out all funky. You know, I don't know.
Mm-mm. I liked that one.
Picasso. Thank you. No, Picasso.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you got an 8-pager.
Yeah. It mm-hmm. wasn't supposed to be an 8-pager. And then the more that I researched, the more that my fingers went cleety clack, cows that moo. You know,
then you just keep finding stuff.
Yes.
And you're like, well, where does this need to go? Because yep. it needs to go here. Because mm-hmm. yep, I'm with you.
I mean, we 45 episodes in. I feel like mm-hmm. we, you know, that's how it be.
Yep.
Yeah. So slap him with it, Brooke.
Slap, slap, pop, pop.
Scooby-Doo, pop, pop. Okay.
Yep. Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora.
Mm-hmm.
What up, y'all? Welcome back. It's Teachers Talk Crime, and y'all already know what it is. We about to be in here talking about murder, suicide, dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So, y'all already know what it is. Don't sit here and act like y'all know. We about to get into it. So, if you're not ready, I'm going to need you to leave. All right, then.
So this case is particularly close to me because it happened in Long Island, which is where I grew up. So, yeah. And in fact, my sister actually knew the girl who I'm going to discuss in today's lesson as well. So
that's terrifying.
Girl, yes.
What did they call it? I know I've messed up this line in the previous episode, but it's like you are the one to the something degree, the first degree. You're always within a first degree of a murder. I don't know.
Yeah, you have said that a couple times. I don't really know what the saying is, but I feel like it's something with a degree because you always say it's with a degree. I don't know. I don't know really what to say. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just go with it.
All right, cool. We'll begin our lesson on Friday, June 6, 2014. 21-year-old single mom Sarah Good was getting ready to go out with her friends for the night at her sister and brother-in-law's house. Her brother-in-law, Nick Gianetto, offered to watch her 4-year-old daughter, Jocelyn, but he also helped Sarah paint her nails, which, according to one source, was like a tradition that they had done together for years. That's super adorable.
Yeah.
And if you, like, I have to send you a picture of Nick, because, like, Nick is, like, this, like, big dude. You know what I mean? Like, he is, like, just big Italian. I think he's Italian. I'm going to just assume he's Italian. Okay. So, but, you know, like, you see this big Italian man paint somebody's nails, you're going to be like, huh? But, like, it's just, like, adorable to see, you know?
Yeah.
So Nick first met Sarah when she was 3 years old, so they literally grew up together. And in the Dateline Secrets Uncovered episode on this case, he describes her as being outgoing, talkative, and just fun to be around. But also the fact that they're still keeping up with childhood traditions, just like...
That's really cute.
Yeah, it's adorable.
You're never too old. You're never too old.
Seriously. And I hope to develop, you know, traditions like this with, like, my own kids, because I feel like these are the things you really cherish and remember, you know? So a direct quote from Nick about that evening is as follows. We laughed and talked. You know, she was going out for the first time in a long time. So Sarah just recently broke up with her boyfriend of 2 years, DJ Waters. Waters. It has a 2 T, so that's Waters.
It has to be. Yeah. How else could you?
Because Waters is like weird. Waters.
I've never heard anybody called that.
DJ Waters. Yeah. But DJ Waters. So she was ready to go out for this, like, night out. So she left the house in good spirits that night, and sadly, she had no idea that she would never return home again. So really quickly, before I go into what happened, I just want to give some background information about Sarah. So Sarah was the youngest of 9 children, and her family was incredibly close. In high school, Sarah was in a relationship with a boy, and she did get pregnant at the age of 17 with her daughter, Jocelyn. Jocelyn's father went off to the army, and when he returned, their relationship just didn't work out, and then Sarah just became a single mom. So being raised in a big family, Sarah was more than prepared for motherhood. One of her friends stated the following. She had so much experience, you know. Her sisters and brothers have so many kids. She was always babysitter number one. And her sister, Elizabeth, stated the following about Sarah. She was like a natural mother, you know. She knew what to do and how to take care of her and love her up every second, and that's what she did. And being the queen of a single mom she was, she didn't let single motherhood like deter her. She ended up graduating from high school and college.
Yeah. I saw a TikTok recently of a woman and her daughter, and just give similar vibes. Like, you know, they say like moms are superheroes, and I firmly believe that, but
yeah.
She, one, was homeless, and she made it to the shelter every single night on time, woke up at 4 a.m. every morning and studied for like 45 minutes for her college classes that she was putting herself through.
Yeah.
And then like around 6 a.m. after she'd gotten herself dressed and packed their bags from the shelter, she woke up her daughter and like got her daughter ready for school. And like, I mean, just like...
The dedication.
Didn't let anything life had thrown at her stop her from, like, just, you know.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like you said, moms are superheroes, but, like, moms who, like, I mean, there are some moms who just are not deserving to be moms. But, like, the majority of us, we would do whatever needs to be done. And Sarah was one of those people.
Absolutely.
So, like I said earlier, my sister knew Sarah and was actually in a class with her in high school. They were actually in a pottery class together, so I asked my sister to tell me a little bit about her interaction with Sarah, and she stated the following. We were just friends in pottery. We tried to plan a couple times to hang outside of school, but it never worked out. She was funny AF. Me, her, and Ariel just naturally vibed. And I'm also friends with Ariel since she's friends with my sister, so I reached out to her about her personal insights about Sarah, and she stated the following. She was such a great person. She was so unique and probably weighed 90 pounds, but was so feisty and full of spunk that I'm still in shock at the manner of her death. As feisty as she was so sweet and caring. I was so impressed with how she cared for her baby while we were still in high school. She definitely inspired my strength to parent when I was 19. Not that any of this would help your podcast for information, but she really was just the nicest and sweetest girl with the perfect attitude. I'm sure she fought all the way to the end. I'm positive of it. Mm. Right? And they were just
said nice things. Right? They're not even their best. Like, that's not even her best.
Right? But they were like, and these are just like two people, like, who knew her. You know what right. I mean? Like, imagine what, and they weren't like super close to her, like you're saying. So just imagine what like her family and like her really close friends would have said about her. So
like
it
her
just,
besties.
Yeah. So it like just really sounds like she was just an amazing person, friend, and mother.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. After graduating from college, Sarah became a medical technician. And that's about as much background information that I was able to find. And I know, like, typically I go more into it, but, like, I searched high and low, and I just, I mean, I could have went down, like, people in high school and tracked them down, but, like, I just really didn't want to, because I was,
right,
like, I was there when this, like, unfolded, like, real time. Like, I remember my sister being like, dang, she's missing, and I was like, dang, that's really crazy. And then, you know.
And how far apart are you and your sister in
age?
Age.
5 years.
So that, you're, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So where were you in the time that this happened? Already in school?
Yeah. Or married? Because this was 2014. I graduated in 07. I graduated from my master's in 2011.
Hmm. Okay. So you were like, you were adulting.
Yeah. I think I was already in Delaware at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. I think so. Right, 2007. No, I graduated from Penn State 2011. Graduated from Dowling 2014. So I was, and right after graduation, I left. So this happened in June. So I graduated in May. So I was already in Delaware at this point, I think. Or like in the process of moving. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So now that we have some insight of who Sarah was, let's just get back to our lesson. So here are the events that happened that were later discovered. According to former Suffolk County Assistant District Attorney Janet Albertson, after leaving for the evening, Sarah met up with a childhood friend named Jason Flores. Sarah and Jason reconnected a few weeks prior, and according to one source, Jason took a picture of him and Sarah in her blue 1999 BMW at 6:51 p.m. Sarah drove to pick up Brandon Allen, who was a friend of Jason's. The three of them went to a party that had about 12 people hanging out in the front yard of someone's house. And according to one source, they hung out at the party for about 45 minutes. Another group shot selfie was taken at 10:18 p.m. Sarah, Jason, and Brandon all went back to Brandon's house to watch a movie. And at around 1 p.m., Sarah took Jason home before heading home herself. And at 1:17 a.m., Jason texted Sarah making sure she had made it home safely, and she immediately responded with yes.
Okay.
So my sources are a little iffy on the details, but the next day, Sarah was either supposed to go to a family party or her nephew's birthday party. I mean, they're both family parties, but I couldn't be sure which one it actually was. And then she was going to pick up her daughter from said party.
But she was going to be around family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nonetheless.
Because she had a huge family, and they were just very close-knit. Mm-hmm. So, however, Sarah never showed up, which is extremely outside of her character. They tried calling and texting Sarah, but heard nothing from her. And the next day, her family went to the police and filed a missing person report.
That's the worst feel.
Yeah.
You know, Daddy Dozier and I were talking about this because we were watching the, 48 Hours
mm-hmm.
together.
The like, first 48?
Like to watch, the first 48.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people come on there and they're like, well, you know, she didn't answer within an hour and that's really unlike her. And my dad was like, you don't answer me for like a week. He's like, and I don't think anything of it. Should I be more concerned?
And I mean, but that's also who you are as a person. You know what I mean?
Right. And I was like, but don't lie and tell these people if I get murdered that was weird, because it's not weird.
Yeah.
It's not weird.
I feel
but
like
if I don't answer you.
Yeah.
That would be weird. Like, yeah. I just, to me, it's like in my dad, I'm like, okay, I'll answer in just a minute and I forget.
Mm-hmm.
But with you, I know it's like business. Let me address this and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I feel like old Ashley, like, it would have been like, oh my God, she didn't respond. Like, ah. But like new Ashley, she be stressed. And literally when I get home, my phone is on do not disturb. And yes. I just want to be left alone unless it's mm-hmm. related to teachers and doctor podcast, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So just know if Brooke don't hear from me and I don't hear from her,
something's wrong, babe.
I'm calling everybody. Everybody gonna know. So luckily enough, according to one source, the police recalled that there was a report earlier from an officer who saw an abandoned BMW not far from Sarah's home earlier that day. So they were able to find her vehicle pretty quickly. And when I say that the car was found close to her home, I mean a mile away from her house. So it's like that close. Like, that's pretty daggone close.
Yeah, it really is.
So upon inspection of the vehicle, police found a bloody handprint on the hood of her car, and it was clear that the struggle began in the car due to the amount of blood that was inside, as well as a large chunk of Sarah's hair in the door jamb of the car.
That don't look good.
No, but they didn't find this out till later, like after they took the car and looked in it. But like first sights, they like looking in the window, like you could see blood in there, and then on the hood of the car was a handprint. So after the discovery of her car, both family and police were asking for the public's help to locate Sarah. Suffolk County Police Detective Sergeant Michael Fitzharris stated the following. We were very concerned about that. And when he says that, he's referring to the closeness of the location of her car to her home, which she shared with her mother and her daughter. He continues to say the following. This is a 21-year-old lady. She has a 4-year-old daughter, a very close family, and the circumstances, as I've explained, are suspicious to us. Her sister Elizabeth said the following, directing it right to Sarah. Your baby girl can't wait to give you that great big hug when you come home. We just want you to come home safely.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
And you know that her 4-year-old doesn't understand what's going on.
Yes. And I didn't. Did I put this in here? I don't think I did. Maybe I did. It might have been further down, or I can't remember if I put it in here. But the family also thought it was weird when they were texting her and not responding, because one of her sisters reached out to her and like texted her, and because her daughter was like, oh, I miss my mom. So she was like, oh, like Jocelyn misses you. And she never responded. But Sarah was always on it when it came to her daughter. Like, it was like, drop everything. All
right. Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? So the
She's
fact
a great
that
mom.
Yeah. So the fact that her. Like, her sister was reaching out to her in regards to her daughter, and she didn't respond. Was like, oh, hold up. Flag in the play. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
So the area in which her car was located was very close to a wooded area. Police immediately began searching the area with hopes of locating Sarah. A direct quote from one source states, officers were armed with machetes and other tools to cut through brush as they scoured through the woods. Unfortunately, the cops discovered nothing that would bring them any step closer to finding Sarah. During this time, Nick, Sarah's brother-in-law that I mentioned earlier, you know, the one with the nails?
Who's
the
yes.
one with the nails? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Discovered that Sarah was posting some pretty cryptic tweets to Twitter. According to one source, on June 1st, she posted the following tweet. So you know I live on a dead-end road? I see you creeping. And on June 3rd, she posted, getting threatened for days now. Is that the new thing to do? Clearly, these tweets didn't disclose who they were about, but it was thought that it was about her ex-boyfriend, DJ Waters, and his mother, because apparently when they broke up, there was some sort of like issue that occurred, and Sarah posted on social media about it. And an anonymous tip disclosed that DJ left Sarah a threatening voicemail asking her to take down the post that she made, and then apparently his mother also called Sarah and threatened to kill her. And this was so concerning to Sarah that she actually reported it to the police.
I was about to say, did she get the police involved? Mm-hmm. Because yeah, make a threat on my life and we not going to be okay.
And okay. DJ was questioned and fingerprinted. DJ was questioned and fingerprinted by police, but he was never taken into custody. Sarah's family and friends conducted searches upon searches for Sarah. Hundreds of people showed up to help look for her, her ex-boyfriend included. Nick had even taken matters into his own hands, searching for the last known people that Sarah was with and demanding answers. According to Dateline Secrets Uncovered episode, he actually got called down to the station, and the police like literally were like, yo bro, you need to calm down and like let us do our job. And Nick vowed to them that, like, if I find whoever did this or had something to do with Sarah's disappearance, that I will bring them to you and not handle it myself. And the police had no choice but to take his word for it. But, like, Nick admitted on this episode that at that particular time, he didn't think he would have been able to deliver that person to the police alive. Like, he would have handled it himself.
If you were the police,
mm-hmm.
and someone has inserted them in this manner into the case, do you think that that would have, like, placed them on your persons of interest list just because of how aggressive they're coming across? Or, like, how would you perceive this? Because I'm like, and I've always been told that more than likely the person involved will show up to these search parties and, like, insert themselves into the investigations. Yeah.
In this particular case, because, like, I know the relationship that Nick and Sarah had based on all my research, like, even prior to getting to, like, who did it, I feel like he was just really concerned, because I'm not sure if this is true or not. Like, I don't think he's not her godfather, but he's Jocelyn's godfather. I'm almost 90% sure. Mm-hmm. So, like, they were just really close. Like, and he's known her from childhood. You know what I mean? So, like,
right.
So I wouldn't suspect him, but I do understand what you're saying, because, like, they're like, oh, people like to insert themselves into the situation just so they have a better idea of, like, how close they are to getting to the actual, you know, that the fact that they did it. But for this particular case, I just think because of the close-knitness of their family, because it wasn't only him, like, all of the family was, like, rallying together and, like, conducting searches and talking to people. He was just, like, the front man, because, like I said, like, once I send you a picture, you'll see, but, like, Nick is, like, he's, like, Diesel, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's, like, a bodyguard that you go to the club, and he's, like, ID. Like, he one of them.
Okay.
He looked like that.
I mean, yeah, and it definitely was by any means, not any means whatsoever accusing. I'm just, like, trying to think of what we know about true crime. And could it have come across the wrong way to police in that point, like, in that time?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't see anything in my, any of my research that they were considering him.
Right.
Nothing.
Well,
like,
they were probably just like, dude, please chill out. We cannot do our job if you're going to be in the
way. That was literally what it was. Yeah. So the police called Brandon Allen on Sunday, June 8th, and he voluntarily came in for questioning. And they questioned him for hours, but they didn't really get anything out of him, because if you remember, Sarah didn't know him like that, because he was a friend of Jason's. So they asked for a DNA sample as well as a handprint sample, because they did have that handprint on the front of Sarah's car, and he agreed to provide them with both. Brandon was told that he can go, but to stay in the area. And I'm guessing it's because if they had any further questions for him, you know, they could easily bring him in. So Brandon immediately joined the search for Sarah, but was roughed up by some of her family members. Mind you, he was one of the last people to see Sarah alive. And at that point, the family had no answers and no one to blame but the last people who saw her. So it makes total sense why they reacted the way they did.
And they're not a family that is sitting idle and letting the police do their job.
Like, oh, no. Like, they were.
You know
were,
what I mean? Like,
yeah. Like, when I was watching parts of the Dateline, what is it called? Dateline Unsolved? Dateline Secrets? I can't remember the episode. But when I was watching the episode on this case, like, anytime they heard sirens, they would hop in their car and go. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like they were on go all the time trying to find her. And when they weren't out, they were all together figuring out, like, okay, what's our next moves? What do we have to do to find her?
I feel like this is the family that has the red yarn and it's like on the bulletin board and it's from one pin to the other.
So the family tried to contact Jason Flores, but they never heard from him, which was a little suspicious to them. After all, Jason was the absolute last person to see Sarah alive. Nick and his people even went out looking for Jason themselves so they can talk to him, but they were unable to find him as well. Nick stated that word was going around that he was looking for Jason, and he believed that that caused Jason to go into hiding. But
what are you hiding for?
And that's where I'm going into. Like, I mean, if you weren't involved, and I'm sure you heard about Brandon's interaction with the family, so I imagine that he was afraid that he would receive the same type of treatment if he was found. But also playing devil's advocate, if you truly had nothing to hide, then why not go to the police and just speak your truth? You know what I'm saying?
Right, but then I'm going to play devil's advocate because back to when Daddy Dozier and I were watching, you know, the first 48 or whatever, and I told him, I was like, if anything ever happens in my life to anyone that I know personally, or if I just happen to be unfortunately in an area where something happens and I'm around and I have to be questioned. I do not care if the bottom of my heart and in my head, if I know I didn't do it, I'm going to lawyer up anyways. Because I'm not going to, just from doing this and watching what we've watched and watching how police treat people, they will twist and turn anything and everything they say if their eyes get set on you.
Oh, 100%.
And I would walk in and be like, and everybody's like, well, you obviously have something to hide. You have something to hide. No, I'm protecting myself. Yeah.
And I feel everybody always feels like we're like, oh, you lured up, you got something. No, that's a smart thing to do.
Right. It's like if you get pulled over for a DUI, you never blow.
Yeah.
It's a smart thing to do.
Yeah. Hashtag is a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we didn't teach you anything, it's a smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
It turns out that the police, like that Jason was never found because he was actually locked up.
Oh, yeah, that'd do it.
So they were able to they were able to locate Jason before Sarah's family did and discovered that he had an unrelated warrant out for his arrest for harassment. So he was questioned for 2 days but kept his story the same. Sarah dropped him off. He had no idea where he was. And when police asked him to provide DNA and a handprint sample, he consented. According to Jason, the police treated him very poorly while he was in their custody. And when they finally released him, they gave him the same warning as Brandon to stay close. Jason states that the police spoke to him over 30 times in regards to Sarah's disappearance.
Well, they probably thought, we can do that because you're locked up. Where else are you going to go?
Yeah. And they like apparently treated him like crap, or like calling the types of names. Like, we know you did it. Da, 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 like this, that, and the third. And it's just like, you don't know that for a fact. Like, I know you're playing good cop, bad cop, trying to find, you know, but like this man, like he just got back into like a relationship with her and is telling you like, yo, I don't know where she is. She took me home. I texted her. Like, you can check, you know what I mean? Like, you can check my phone. You can check the records. I was where I said I was going to be. Like, what else do you want from me?
Yeah. How soon when she was discovered missing, did he get locked up? I wonder.
They didn't have dates for when he was. I know that Brandon, it was June 8th, and her night out was on the 6th.
Oh, so like.
Yeah, like 2 days later. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not sure about.
Probably pretty close in timeline.
Yeah, I would assume so, because it seems like everybody was on it trying to find her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, police were able to catch a break, and it wasn't because of their detective work. It was because of the detective work of Sarah's best friend, Alora. Sarah was on
those besties.
Period.
Women do the best investigating.
We always do. When it comes to your man on Instagram, I'ma find him.
Have you seen that girl on TikTok that literally can find where you live, and it's just because she does searches from your post? And she's like, well, I noticed this window.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And I noticed. Yeah, but like people ask her to do it to see if they can she can actually find it.
I don't want
to
play that game. I don't want to play. That's not a fun game. I don't like it.
No. Because then she puts it on TikTok.
Right? And then everybody going to know where I live. And like, you know, we're kind of like famous podcasters. So like.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
But anyway,
yeah,
Sarah was on Allura's cell phone plan, which meant that all Allura had to do was sign into their, like, the cell phone provider's account to see all of the incoming and outgoing calls and the numbers that Sarah was texting, right? Mm-hmm. So when she did this, she found numbers that she'd never seen before, both outgoing and incoming. And Allura even went as far as calling some of these unfamiliar numbers. However, they didn't have much information to provide other than that the last time that they had seen Sarah was at the party.
Who is they?
Like all the numbers that she was calling.
Okay.
Yeah, because she's like, I mean, they're best friends, so you know who she's talking to and stuff like that. So if you see numbers that you don't know, you're going to be like, oh, that's sketchy.
Right.
Yeah. One of those numbers belonged to Dante Taylor, and he was also at the party that Sarah attended on Friday night. In fact, he called Sarah a number of times on the night that she disappeared. Allura was unfamiliar with Dante, but Allura's boyfriend knew him and remembered that he lived up the block from Sarah. Allura's boyfriend's mom, being that she lived a few houses down from him, made sure to keep her sights on Dante. She observed him on two separate occasions, cleaning out his car, and even followed him from time to time. She hoped Dante would lead her to the answers that Sarah's family was looking for. And word spread to Sarah's family that Dante's number was repeatedly on her phone. And now, you know Nick, he trying to find Dante too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he's just Detective Nick, okay? He's going to find it.
And he said, I'm gonna do y'all's job for y'all.
Exactly.
Watch.
Exactly. Police also wanted to talk to Dante. So when Nick located Dante sitting outside of his home in his car, he called the police to let them know, like, hey, he's here. You could come talk to him. However, Nick did not stay put until they arrived. When police arrived, Nick was saying some not very kind things to Dante, and Dante was just not responding to anything Nick was saying to him. More of Sarah's family showed up, and as the screaming and yelling continued, the police began to worry for Dante's safety. So since they wanted to talk to him anyway, they handcuffed him, told him, like, hey, you're not under arrest, but, like, we want to take you to the precinct for questioning. While he was in their custody, he consented to having both his DNA and handprint taken. Surprisingly enough, he even allowed police to check his phone. And when asked about the contact with Sarah on the night she went missing, he stated that he wasn't actually trying to get in contact with Sarah. He was trying to get in contact with Jason. And Jason confirms this because Jason is friends with Dante. And on the night that Sarah disappeared, Jason was using Sarah's phone to contact Dante because his phone didn't have any service. So with everything checking out, the police were forced to let Dante go. 6 days after her disappearance, police received a 911 call around 6:17 p.m. The caller, who was part of a search party made up of family and friends of Sarah, stated that they had located a woman's body in the woods off of Camden Court in Medford, New York, which Medford is like right down the street from like where I live, like where my family lives. It's like crazy. So when you hear like things in close proximity, right, like you actually know, like it's so close.
Isn't that scary?
It's terrifying because, like, I've probably passed Camden Court, like, so many times. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know what I mean? This is the same area where her car was located. According to one source, the body was located within a mile of where her BMW was found. Suffolk County Chief of the Homicide Unit for the DA's office, Janet Albertson, immediately went down to the scene. And I'm just going to backtrack for a second. Like, I know someone from the search party called, but that person, Nick and the family, were like involved in this search. So Nick and one of the brothers went to go see the body.
Absolutely.
And like they went to, and her sisters was like, is it her? And they kind of were just like, nope, it's not her, and just like kept it moving. But like in their heart of hearts, her car was like a mile away. It's in close proximity to where her vehicle is, where she lives, and they find a woman in the woods. You know what I mean? Like, everybody right. had to put the pieces together. Everybody knew.
Everybody's mathing it up.
Yeah, they were trying not to let people know it was her because, like, they just didn't want to believe it themselves. You know what I mean? But they knew yeah. in their heart of hearts, like, she was wearing the same outfit, you know? Even though it had only been 6 days, we are in the summer months, and it gets hot as hell in Long Island in the summer. So the body was severely decomposed. And even though they didn't have DNA to confirm it, Janet states that she immediately knew that it was Sarah because of what she was wearing. On June 14th, the medical examiner sadly confirmed that the body found in the woods was indeed Sarah's. Sarah had been stabbed. Why that came out like that? Sarah had been stabbed more than 40 times, and trigger warning, semen was found inside of her. Janet Albertson came to the conclusion that Sarah had been raped before she was stabbed. And like the bruising on her body, like I didn't put it in here, but it was evident that like whoever did this to her, like wanted to rape her. Like the bruising
inflict,
on her.
They wanted to inflict pain.
Yeah. Like it was bad. Like it.
And that is very tragic.
Yeah. 100%.
But I think, it with an investigative mindset, you think about semen and you immediately think of all the DNA you've collected thus far. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, we can't bring her back, but we can figure out who took her life.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that can bring some peace and closure. I mean, that's what you would hope for as an investigator. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not always the case, and that's why we have programs like CODIS and things like that. But it does help that at the scene, which not all families have that opportunity, there's DNA.
Yeah. The family was absolutely devastated with the news, and I especially feel for Sarah's daughter, Jocelyn. And like I said earlier, when she was at the party, Jocelyn was specifically asking for Sarah, saying that she missed her. She's 4. She's at the age where she can actively remember significant people in her life. So I just can't even imagine what delivering that news to her was like for her. And it crushes my heart to even think about, like, your mom went out for a night and now your mom's never coming home.
Right.
Like, how do you process that as a 4-year-old?
Well, and 2, I think that I was listening to a case of a child that got abducted, and her mom had gone out with like her 2 besties, and there were people blaming the mother.
I can't stand human beings. Like,
you know, and the thing is, because like there, first of all, why don't moms deserve to go out and have a drink with their friends?
Right?
They out of more than anyone Correct. Deserve that. And they should be able to do that with, out having fear
yes.
that something's going to happen when they leave their home.
Yeah. And I feel like it's like a double standard too. Like with, you're a mom, why are you going out? But like if the dad was to do the same thing, it'd be like, yeah, go ahead, man. Have a, you know, you deserve a break. Like what?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
and no, that's 100%. And yes. And I think that if anyone, not saying anyone has, but if anyone ever tries to say that she should not have gone out, then you need to be deleted. You're canceled. You're gone.
100. Period, bye, 100. Done. Yeah, absolutely.
She deserved that night, and she should have been able to do so without anything happening to her.
Yeah, absolutely. On June 19th, all of the same family, friends, and community members that all came together to search for Sarah laid her to rest. Weeks went by with no answers, getting them any closer to Sarah's killer. Her family called daily, desperate for answers, desperate for closure, but all they kept being told was that they were looking into people and that they had suspects in mind. Meanwhile, forensics were able to pull usable fingerprints from Sarah's car, and it was also determined that the blood in the palm print on the hood of the car was actually Sarah's. So with the usable fingerprints, police began comparing them to the prints that they had collected from various suspects that they had already questioned. And one by one, suspects kept getting eliminated. However, all leads began to point to one person. And that person is Dante Taylor.
Ugh.
And just when you look at him, one thing I noticed about all of his pictures is he had very beautiful eyes. Like they were like a hazily color. They were very nice to look at. But I feel like some people who have really pretty eyes are like typical to people who are like, oh, I can get whatever I, you know what I mean? And I get that vibe from him. Like he can get whatever he wants. And as I go into this, you'll see why I feel this way. Cell phone records showed that Dante called Sarah, and when they tracked the movements of his phone, it went to Sarah's house, and then all phones communication ceased. Also, his handprint was a match to the bloody print that was found on the hood of Sarah's car. So all of this evidence is leading police somewhere, but no arrest was made. Why? Because the police were afraid that his handprint would be thrown out in court, because when they obtained his handprint, it was when Nick had called the police. The time that I discussed earlier, the police got there, they were arguing, they took him down to the station. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So police handcuffed Dante, but like I said earlier, they informed him that he was not under arrest. Unfortunately, they did not read him his Miranda rights when they detained him. So without him being read his rights, that very crucial piece of evidence could be thrown out, which could in turn ruin the case that they had been putting together against Dante.
I was looking at his picture, like his eyes stand out.
They're
his
very piercing.
Yes.
They're his very eyes piercing.
Stand out.
Yes. Luckily, police got a break. Alora's boyfriend's mom was still keeping tabs on Dante. And one day while she was driving, she happened to see him like hiding in the back of a car driving off. Come to find out, Dante was going to Florida.
And he was running.
He was going to Florida because his mom later admitted she was sending him there until it was safe for him to come back.
Not knowing exactly what just happened.
You know, I guess, there was no explanation, but I guess like I would hope that she didn't know anything about Sarah and like, you know, what is about to unfold. But who knows? He had purchased a one-way ticket, so he clearly did not have intentions of returning to Long Island and was clearly fleeing. However, with the potential of having his handprint thrown out of evidence, they weren't prepared to arrest him. Because, you know, you have the cell phone records, you have the palm print's going to be thrown out. Like, so they really only had the cell phone records that was putting him there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything strong enough to really solidify that he had done it. Thankfully, Jason Flores informed police during one of his many police interrogations of another female that claimed that Dante attacked her as well. Apparently, Jason, Dante, and Nicole Lucas hung out one night, and after a couple months, Nicole messaged Jason pretty much stating, like, why would you let him do something like that to me? And Jason had absolutely no idea what Nicole was talking about and questioned her on it, like, yo, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know what you're speaking at. So then she disclosed that Dante tried to rape her, put a knife to her throat, and threatened to kill her.
Mm.
Which it sounds now, very coincidental to what...
It does.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
it does.
Sarah was stabbed. Sarah was raped. You know, I don't know if he threatened to kill her, but he did.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. When you go to trial,
mm-hmm.
they sometimes won't let... I've just heard in other cases that people like Jessica, and when I say people like Jessica, I mean other victims of someone who's committed a crime but never came forward. Nicole, sorry.
Nicole. Oh, you're fine. I was like, who is Jessica?
Nicole,
mm-hmm.
since she never came forward and did a police report or anything like that,
yeah.
judges usually don't allow them to testify, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate because yeah. the jury needs to hear all of this.
But it also, does it count if, like, it's out of the window of, like, what is it called? Statute of limitations? Yeah. Is it, like, if it's out, I understand, but if it's still in the range, does it, like, would they still allow them to?
That I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Because I feel like a lot of times it's like, oh, you can't do anything because it's outside of the stature of limitations. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it was that type of situation. Nicole tried to forget what happened that night, but when police came to speak to her, she wanted to bring her situation to light in hopes that it would help police put away Dante for Sarah's murder. Police were now able to arrest Dante for the attempted rape of Nicole and get another handprint from him, one that would be able to use, you know, as evidence in Sarah's case. So with a warrant in hand, police flew down to Florida for the attempted rape of Nicole Lucas and brought him back to New York. Soon after, he was charged with the rape and murder of Sarah Good. On May 11th, 2016, 2 years after Sarah's murder, Dante's trial began. if found guilty, Dante would receive life in prison without the possibility of parole. And of course, Dante pleaded not guilty. Are we surprised? No.
No. But, you know, our favorite is the defense. I love to hear what they come up with.
Oh, just wait, girl. According to one source, Dante's defense claimed that Dante had consensual sex with Sarah and did not rape or kill her on the night that she disappeared.
You're just the last person known to be with her.
I'm sorry. Was your handprint not on the car? Sorry. Did you flee? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I'm just... Here's the thing. And I heard this. This is what's coming to mind. I was listening to a podcast today. And obviously, the statistic is like... I don't even know the statistic. But majority of the time, when a defense places blame on the victim, it never goes well.
I mean, that's the only thing they had. That's literally all that they had. Like, no, they had consensual sex. Okay, well, if they had consensual sex, why was she bruised up?
Because I ain't consenting to that.
And if you really had consensual sex with her and then later found out that she was dead, wouldn't you want to go to police and be like, hey, just want to let you know, I had sex with her, but I ain't kill her. I mean, granted, that's going to put you on a radar anyway. But if you ain't, if you literally didn't do it, you're going to be all right.
Correct.
And not to mention, the semen that was in her tested positive for him. So, like...
Correct.
You know?
Well, that too. If you knew you had sex with this girl that shows up dead the next day or a few days later, you need to go clear your name.
Yeah.
You need to be like, I have a lawyer. I'm going to take a polygraph. You're going to find my DNA on her. But this is like, here's our text. Check my cell towers.
Yeah.
Like, I did not kill this girl.
100%. And he didn't do that. He fled. He was, you know, cleaning out his car, all this stuff. Like, you was doing all of this stuff.
You were being sketchy.
Yes. Sketchy. Super sketchy. His defense also accused his defense also accused the police of obtaining evidence that linked to Dante illegally, like the handprint. But they got another one after, you know, Nicole came forward legally. So, like, that was kind of like irrelevant, like, you know.
And also, if you willingly say, if they say, hey, can I get your handprint? And you're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and he agreed. But I guess once you don't say the Miranda rights, it's like a wrap after that, you know?
That is very true. Uh-huh. And there's so many, like, legalities and paperwork and, like, all these little things that go into it. And if one thing's wrong, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And they also said that possible suspects in the case were never pursued. But it's just like, they were interviewing all these people. They had Jason for like 2 days.
Yeah. Like, and
so who are these other people you're speaking of?
They started, literally when they got the DNA, they started just checking people off.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, didn't match. Okay, done. Didn't match. Okay, done. Oh, didn't match. Okay, done.
Yeah. Like, I don't, like, nice try, buddy. Nice try, but you failed.
Yeah. They weren't just looking at him.
They weren't. They were looking at everybody. I mean, and Jason, he was like, the cops really thought it was me. Like, they were hounding him. Like, I know you had something to do with it. Like, they were
even looking at the mom, the ex-boyfriend's mom.
Yeah, they were looking at everybody. So, like, where did you get this from? Because you failed. Yeah. Prosecutors explained to the court the evidence and the timeline of Sarah's night out on June 6, 2014. They showed pictures of Sarah that she posted on her Instagram, posts she made on Twitter, as well as the phone records that showed Dante's movements. Also, apparently he revisited Sarah's home days after the murder, which was shown by cell phone records as well. And that's probably to see, like, oh, are they any closer to finding me?
Yeah, why? Well, statistically, they go back to the scene of the crime.
And I don't know if he went to, like, her body, but I think he was just, like, in the area. Like, ooh, let me just, you know. Furthermore, blood was found in Dante's car, and after it was tested, it was confirmed to be Sarah's. So, like, here's the thing. If you had a consensual sex with her, cool. Why is she bleeding?
Yeah. I kind of am like, oh, my gosh. When the defense always uses, oh, well, they had a nosebleed.
Like,
nobody's nose bleeds like that.
Like, leaking, like, I mean, some people have some pretty insane, like, I've seen some in my classroom, like, some, they leaking, okay? But, like, come on now.
Yeah.
No.
But it doesn't seem like they even offered a viable excuse for the blood.
Yeah.
I heard one the other day and it was like, oh, he had a cold sore.
What the hell? Cold sores
don't bleed like that.
Like, I'm sorry. What kind of cold sore leaks like that?
Exactly.
No sorry, Bob. On June 16th, 2016, Dante was found guilty on all counts in the murder of Sarah Good. A direct quote from her sister, Samantha Murphy, states, "I wouldn't say closure. She's not coming back. It's never going to bring her back, but we got him." On July 29th, 2016, Dante was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Let's go.
Wow.
But.
There's always a but.
On October 6, 2017, Dante, who was 22 at the time, hung himself in his jail cell, which I absolutely hate for Sarah's family, friends, and Sarah herself. Mm-hmm. He took the easy way out.
Yeah.
A way that doesn't begin to pay for what he did to Sarah.
No. No.
Like, I hate when people do that. Like you really thought you were gonna get out scot-free?
Well, and I'm, are you adding anything else to that? Because when I was looking at his picture, I saw, that's the only thing that popped up was that he unalived himself in
yes.
October of 2017.
Mm-hmm. There's a little more. There's his mom filed a lawsuit.
Yes.
Against the State Department of Corrections and the community supervision and prison staff for a number of reasons. One of which being that Dante was beaten by prison staff hours before he committed suicide. And a direct quote from one of my sources stated, two sergeants and two corrections officers at, I hope I'm saying this right, Wendy Correctional Facility outside of Buffalo beat Dante with fists and batons, hogtied his arms and legs, and then threw him down a flight of stairs.
Mm-hmm. I read that. That's what I was reading then.
And I could honestly go into more details about the lawsuit, but quite frankly, I don't care.
Well, were the officers correct? No. That is not what the prison system was built for. That is not, you're not in there. You are not a guard to abuse
100%.
At your own willpower.
100%.
Because you have a God complex. That's not what you were hired for. You are there to guard, protect, and maintain some civilizations. And hopefully, if you're doing a great job, you're there to counsel these inmates and be a figure of society and want them to see, you know, that I should do better so that I can get out, blah, blah, blah. So they're in the wrong. However, did Dante choose the easy way out? 100%. Suicide is the most selfish thing you can ever do.
Yeah.
And like you said, we feel for her family because she'll never come back. But now
he's not even paying for what he did. Yes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just, like, there was a lot more into the lawsuit. But like I said, I honestly, one, I don't care. And two, I don't want to bring any more light to Dante because, like, look at what you did.
You took a mother away from her child.
You took a mother. You took someone's daughter. You took someone's sister. You took somebody. And honestly, this is karma. You did what you did and it came back to bite you in your ass. Sorry. Not sorry.
For what reason? And for what motive?
I feel like they did say that what they're assuming is that he tried to had some like sexual advances on her and she turned him down.
That sounds like an ego problem, buddy.
I mean, I'm telling you, the people with the pretty eyes, man. Not all of them, I'm sorry.
We are not just out here just slinging these things around.
Like, what are you, like,
if she didn't want to have sex with you, she didn't want to have sex with you.
And you should have been okay with that.
Yeah.
Because the same thing happened to Nicole. He was trying to like get in her pants and she was like, no. And then that's when he, you know, attacked her as well. And I'm just like, sir, are you really that entitled? Like, oh, she won't give me any. I'm going to beat her. Like, what is wrong with
you? Or you're one of those men that's like, well, no means yes.
Right? Like, she really wanted it. Like, she,
no,
sir,
she
said no. She slapped you in the face. Like, what are you saying?
Yeah.
And the picture, because they provided a picture of him after he had gotten, yo, they messed him up. Like, he had a black eye, like half of his face was swollen. His lips were huge. Like, they did a number on him. Mm. And again, should they have done that to you? Absolutely not. That's not their job. Did you deserve it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you go back to your cell, you heal, you request a transfer, and you serve your time.
And apparently, like, I know I wasn't going to talk about it, but apparently he was, like, suicidal. He was in, he went to the, I believe it was the Marines, and then got kicked out because I think it said something about he tried to hang himself, so they kicked him out and something like that. Or, I don't know. But, again, I don't. You killed her.
I feel like the Marines wouldn't just kick you out for that. They would try to offer some mental health counseling, because that could be a number of things. That could be PTSD, mm-hmm, things like that. But
I do know he wasn't in for very long. Like, he was not in. I could be wrong. It was the Marines. I can't remember. But I did know he enlisted with one of those forms, but wasn't in for very long.
But even PTSD is not an excuse to take another life because they wouldn't have consensual sex with you.
Like, that is just entitlement, and you need to grow up and deal with it.
Yeah.
Rejection is a part of life.
It is.
100%. So, like, yeah. I did want to end this lesson on a lighter note. It appears that Jocelyn, Sarah's daughter, is now being raised by one of her sisters and Nick, which I absolutely love. I love it. I'm not sure. The one article that I read said it would appear that way because of his social media. Like, Jocelyn's, like, all over it. So.
Right.
So either he's just spending a lot of time with her or she's living there. I'm not sure.
Which is both great ways.
Yeah. Wonderful. Like, Nick was a writer for Sarah from the moment he met her at the age.
Both great ways. I said both great ways. Great both ways.
You were just flipping things around today. What's going on with you?
Uh-huh. But like you said, regardless, it's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Nick was a writer for Sarah from the moment he met her at the age of 3 and continued to be there for her when she was missing, throughout the murder investigation, and now for her daughter. So I just truly love that he is able to be there for Jocelyn and kind of just not take her place, because clearly no one could take a mother's place, but to just be there for Jocelyn like he was for Sarah.
Well, I was going to say that there's nobody better that I can think of that would keep her memory alive.
Oh, 100%. For Jocelyn. 100%.
Yeah.
And the fact that the family is just so close, like, knitted, like, it's just, like, that much better for her that she still has, you know, tons of people who still care for her. And I know Sarah's up there like, yup, that's my baby, though.
Look at her in that pageant.
Mm-hmm. And that is our lesson on Sarah Good.
I had not heard that case before. Yeah.
It was crazy because I just remember, like, seeing people post about it and the hashtags. And it's just, when you live through something like that, it's, like, really bizarre. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like, my sister knew her. My sister was in class with her. Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Is somebody just in your house?
I sure hope not.
Well, you were looking over there. Like,
I know I heard something, but I couldn't, you know. Stop scaring me, because I gotta pee.
Alrighty. Well, Ash is gonna go cleanse her apartment now.
Oh, stop. It's scaring me. It's scaring me. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Yep.
Everything's fine.
It is.
But yeah, that was the case. No real relationship. I feel like a lot of our cases haven't been directly related to education, but at this point in time, like, it's hard to find those cases, but I feel like we're just like the title of our podcast. We're just teachers talking about crime.
Yeah.
Committed by, you know, young people, youngish people.
Yes.
Immature people, stupid people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All righty. Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Tell them.
The bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So we will see you soon. Because apparently the full moon was yesterday.
Sorry.
There's been a lot going on. You know, Brooke with the new baby. Mm-hmm. And Sister Mary. And just me just grappling with the fact that life is crazy right now.
Yeah.
And trying to not make it so crazy. So,
but we do have a bonus coming for you.
Yeah, we got plans.
Mm-hmm, we do.
We got plans. We gonna let you know those plans one day. Not today though, because we gotta go. Because mm-hmm. Brooke gotta work tomorrow. I don't, because it's election day. So.
Yeah, apparently that's a thing. Never heard of that. So yeah. I've never gotten off work for election day. Yeah. But happy election day.
Happy election. Go out and vote. Vote, vote, vote. I mean, at this point, you should have already voted. So I hope you voted, voted, voted.
Oh, yeah, that's true. This is going to be Wednesday.
Yeah.
Happy post-election day.
Post-election day.
Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't get off on election day.
I'm sorry, girl.
I actually did. I will have off Friday.
Period. For Veterans Day. Oh, the Veterans Day. I don't know where all these jingles are coming from. I got to go.
Yep. All righty.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.